The Talk of the Northwest. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the programme. It is the Greg Hughes Show here with you now for the next 2 hours. We've got an awful lot coming up for you. You can get in contact with the programme and get involved in our Friday panel conversation by texting and WhatsApping the following numbers: 086 60 25000. That is the WhatsApp and the text number, 086 60 25000. Give us a call on 074 91 25000, 074 91 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. Let's welcome that panel onto the programme. We'll say good morning first to Mary Hart, broadcaster and journalist. Good morning, Mary. Lovely to see you again.
Good morning, Greg. Nice to see you too.
Great to have you on the programme. Nicola Mahan is owner of Mode Embroidery and Print in Calais. Good morning to you, Nicola.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having me.
No, it's our pleasure. Lovely to have you on board. And we're also joined by Councillor Jerry McMonagle, who's Sinn Féin councillor in the Letterkenny Milford Municipal District and chair of the Local Safety Partnership Committee. Good morning, Jerry.
Morning, Greg. Morning to Mary and Nicola as well.
Good to have you on board with us. Obviously, I think we as a nation, we as a country, as a society, are still reeling and trying to come to terms with the awful collision that we saw on the M9 last weekend. 5 young lives lost, 4 family members still very seriously ill in hospital. And I want to tease out a couple of elements of this. And I'll start with you, Jerry, if you don't mind. The immediate social media reaction to the M9 crash highlighted what seems to be a rapid descent from anger over a tragic event into widespread systemic anti-traveller rhetoric. How can public institutions and media platforms better handle online hate during high-profile tragedies like this? And where does the responsibility lie when that grief that's felt for, as a nation, turns into a clear prejudice?
Yeah, well, Greg, you're right. I mean, it was an awful tragedy. You know, there's a large number of families that have been involved and affected by this tragedy. 5 young men lost their lives, and there's 4 people fighting for their lives. And that community that they come from is grieving very sorely today. What can we do about social media? Well, the only way we're going to stop it is to get rid of social media. Social media has become a cancer in our society. It has been a platform now for hate, and I don't know if we can ever control it. There doesn't seem to be like we have Meta now, who's in that big court case in California in relation to the addictive nature of social media for young people. And whilst initially there was sympathy going out to all people concerned and injured and killed in this latest road tragedy, it's very soon turned into a hate fest, as you said. And I think people need to take responsibility for their actions and their own actions and what they say and do. But unfortunately, social media hasn't got that button, and it just allows people to say what they want about anything. But it's particularly, more sensitive when people have lost their lives and others are fighting for their lives, and how people attribute blame for that. There's no doubt about it that the young lads who were in that car driving up the motorway the wrong way were totally wrong. I would like to put a focus on how can we stop that happening again? How can we take young people away from that type of behaviour? And how can we teach people generally of how to, when they're behind a wheel of a car, how they behave, how they drive, because we have far too many deaths on our roads.
And I think it's important that we use the opportunity to tease that out a little more. Mary Hart, where do you stand in relation to this? Do you agree with Jerry, or is social media really an opportunity for us to, whether we like to hear it or not, give us an insight into what a lot of people are thinking? We're hearing their opinions, we're seeing their opinions in a public forum.
I do agree with Jerry. I mean, the tragedy of this is enormous. The shock of, that this could actually happen, and of course there are grieving families, both those who were have loved ones or neighbors, friends killed, and also those the family that are struggling to survive in hospitals. My feeling on this is that you'll not stop prejudice. You know, people nowadays have fixed opinions because they get them from social media, and you'll not change them and the hatred that comes on. There's always going to be somebody before you're born. There's going to be somebody who hates you before they ever met you. They'll not like you. There's always going to be hate, and there's always going to be love, and there's nothing we can do about that. It's just human nature. But I totally and utterly agree with Jerry. The only way that you can stop social media having an influence on the behavior of people, and especially the behavior of young people to get their likes and their sort of faces on a screen, is to ban it. And banning it is not going to stop it. People will find a way around it. What you have to do is to get those young people to internalize that they don't do this, and you start that in school, and you start that at home. I mean, there's obviously parental responsibility, but of course we now learn that one of these poor young people were in the care of TUSA, and that young person didn't walk in off the street onto TUSA. They were sent there by the courts. So therefore, these young people have come from what would appear, some of them from dysfunctional families. So that's where you start. You start in schools, you start with education programs. There's tons of Garda diversion projects around the country, and for the life of me, I don't know what it is that they do, because if they're there and they're paid for by the taxpayer, then why are we not seeing the results of
that? Well, we're
not
ever going to see a 100% success rate with any
No,
interventions
we're not.
either, but we
No.
do know there are, and the minister with responsibility was up recently visiting. We have these centres all over the county, and I'm sure they do effective work. Is someone going to slip, through the cracks? Of course they are. But it doesn't mean the whole system is not functioning.
No, but at the same time, we've all, I mean, we have Alan Kelly calling out, we have to get TikTok to the commission the man, to speak out. And that's going to achieve absolutely nothing other than getting Alan Kelly a headline. They're not a legal body. They can't apply a law. They can't make TikTok come forward.
Can I just push back a little bit on that, if you don't mind, Mary? Because this is one of the areas of a particular interest, and I've done quite a deal of research in it. The truth is, TikTok is actively promoting this activity. It's actively promoting cars being stolen, people evading the Gardaí, people driving up the wrong lane in motorways. If you watch one of these videos for 10, 11 seconds on TikTok, then every second video you will be getting similar behaviour. There are thousands and thousands of likes, thousands and thousands of comments. The young people involved see that. They become TikTok famous. So TikTok is actively promoting this content, which is driving, to some extent at least, the participation in it, because people are hungry for acknowledgement and
notoriety.
Well,
I watched Prime Time last night, where there was I can't remember his name now, a social worker in Dublin, and they know how many people were on their legs, 200. So that's not a lot. It's 200 people for that little group of guys that are wanting to get famous. So
I'd be really concerned if that's the kind of crap Prime Time are putting out, because I can tell you right now, it's not about your followers. It's about how many likes you get and how many comments you get.
No, that's not what was said. What I'm trying to say is that in the early 90s, there was joyriding on the streets, and there were 80 or 100 people or young people on the streets. So these things are going to happen regardless of TikTok. But I agree that TikTok are there as a media forum for young people and for old people and for anybody who wants to. Unfortunately, that is the way of life. How you hit them, how you charge them, you penalise them. Ireland has been a leading country in bringing in, smoking in the workplace. They've been a leading country in bringing in plastic bags. They could be the leading country, and we're small enough to do it, to say every time TikTok breaks the law, you fine them 1 million euros. And if they don't pay it, then they're blank completely off. So you charge them, they have to pay up. I don't know if they've paid up any of the fines that they've ever been given, but TikTok have a bank account that's probably larger than the Irish Exchequer. You know, they're in this for money, no other reason, because that's all that, that's why they exist, for the shareholders and Mark Zuckerbergs of the world to make billions. And the only way to hit them is to hit them in their bank accounts, and it has to be a serious account. And if it's 1 million for the first week, 2 million for the second week, if they haven't taken down the postings, and you know, there's that's the way that you start hitting these organisations.
Yeah, indeed. And we'll tease out a bit more in what else we can do to try and prevent this going forward. I want to bring Nicola Mahon in here now, and you know, there again, I've dug a little bit into this on the social media, and if you look at, there are a number of high profile accounts of members in the of the traveller community, and I think what's driven some of this is a bit of frustration in that, you know, they're talking of the innocence of the lads, that they didn't intend to do it, and that people should be more sympathetic to them and their families, and there seems to be sort of two competing sort of narratives in that social media space, Nicola, and it's kind of that hate and conversation seems to be overshadowing the whole tragedy.
Well, there is, five lives have been killed, five boys have no doubt behaved recklessly, made individual choices to get into the car, and unfortunately they've lost their lives, and another family are praying probably really hard to make sure that they have a full recovery for their four, for the three children and the nephew. But as a, can we blame a completely entire community for what those five boys done? No, I don't believe we can. It's not the travelling community's fault for those five boys' behaviour. And I think it's in every community of speeding on the roads, and it's about educating our children from a young age to have road safety in all angles of the road, from being pressed to walking on the roads, to driving. Like, I went to Knock on Monday and came back, and I think our lights flashed in front of us about five times. People behaving recklessly on the road. But as for TikTok, unfortunately, social media is the place where all young people are getting their thrills, seeking and posting on the social media, getting the likes, and it's encouraging more behaviour. And they need to, the companies need to take responsibility for that and delete as soon as these videos be uploaded and block the people who are uploading them.
And a caller says, as a foster parent under the Tusla umbrella, we are dedicated parents to many children, but Tusla is a difficult agency to work with, mostly because of staffing issues within the system. I would hate to see families like ours end up with the blame for the incident on the M9. And Mary Hart, I'll come back to you in relation to that. Obviously, I just wonder at what point does Tusla get become under extra scrutiny? You know, I mean, there's an awful lot of missing people cases that go on for months, and they're often young people in the care of Tusla. At least one of these, or one of these boys that died, was also under the care of Tusla. I mean, that's supposed to be the safety net. You know, you were talking of safety nets a little earlier on. It's troubling, isn't it?
Very troubling. I mean, this young person obviously was removed from wherever their family and put into taken to into the courts, and then the court decides just to put them into care, state care, for which the state pays, and therefore Tusla have the money to do that. Personally, my feelings of Tusla is that it is a failed model. It is just not working. As you say, there have been so many cases. You know, we have had them in Donegal, where, you know, people that are young people in Tusla care, where they've managed to get out and go off. And you know, there have been cases of rape and all sorts of issues of people who are, young people who are in care. So certainly, Tusla took them a long time. It took them a long time to come out and say that there was one of those young people in their care. So they should have known, they would have known that from the day one. And I don't see any reason why they wouldn't have known that. And if they didn't, then that's another big question. You know, how did that person manage to get out of care? They may have been in foster care, and that's not to say that the foster parents are to blame, but there's something missing. And as I say, you know, you have to get young people into a safe environment. Now, if their parents may have not all as well have had a safe environment, it's one of those, you know, perpetual situation. So, I mean, starting at the beginning, which is when young people are young at school, that's where you get them, that's where you train them, that's where you internalise that their behaviour. You show them, you know, the wrong way and the right way. And, you know, there are always going to be people who are looking for attention and will go the wrong way for a whole load of different reasons. But I certainly would be very, very concerned that the government should now be looking into what is wrong with Tusla, not so much how did this happen.
Yeah, Gerry, in fairness to Aintu, they for a long time have had Tusla under an awful lot of scrutiny in gathering information and statistics, which doesn't reflect well on the agency. Does your party or do you as an individual have concerns about Tusla and its role and its effectiveness?
Yeah, look, I think everybody would have. Look, I met with Tusla recently here in the county just to get a sense of the work they're involved in. You know, and I have to say, I mean, the resources that they have to deal with the increasing number of children that are getting put into care are not adequate. I feel that they're not staffed enough. I felt for a long time that it was a closed shop. It was like a secret society, too, so you could never get information from them. And I can understand that to a certain degree because of the type of work that they do and the information that they have to sort of protect and protect the children in particular from scrutiny. But there is, you know, there's been too many incidences where children who are in the care of Tusla have turned up in various guises, whether it's in criminality or victims of sexual assault, as Mary's alluded to, or in this case where one of the young lads was under their care as well and ended up dead in a motorway in the early hours of the morning. So, look, it would do no harm for the government to look at it and look at the model and see, can it be reinforced and better resourced? Because I think the staff in there are under enormous pressure. Mm. They do good work.
And I think
the sledgehammers come out without looking at the actual problem, which is the resourcing and probably funding and the model, as Mary described it, is of Tusla. So, yeah, look, a review would be very much welcome.
Because, Nicola, it's probably the case that, you know, like that family that messaged in there, who are doing the best that they can working with an under-resourced Tusla, and maybe Tusla themselves feel that they don't have the resources. And then something tragic like this happens and everyone takes an interest. Yet I'm sure, you know, those working with and within Tusla have been saying for the longest time, look, we to do our job properly, we need more resources, or we need this, or we need that. And, you know, they're the cold face, they take the abuse, but they're probably screaming at this all of the time. It's only now we're taking an interest.
Well, for me, I can see I have a sister-in-law and a sister who's social workers, and they are stretched to the limit. And I have friends who are foster carers, and they're also stretched to the limits. They can cope with the children up to a certain age, and then once they hit the teenage years, that's where difficulty comes in. And unfortunately, they don't have the resources or the help that they should receive. And that's probably something that the government would need to look at, and how to support parents and the children at this critical age. And now these, like, we all bring our children up and hopefully they make individual right choices. But unfortunately, sometimes they don't. And even from the best families, children can go out and make wrong decisions. So I don't think it's right to blame. I think everyone has to look at their actions and how they support children coming up through the years. And unfortunately, that starts at home, school and community.
Just in terms of policing, Gerry, I'll go back to you and work the other way around through the panel. You know, if I were to drive the wrong way purposely, the wrong way up a motorway and cause a death, the greatest sanction I could face is 20 years. That's as an adult. I'm not sure what it is for children. We seem to be very reactionary in terms of our policing here, but if that is to be the case, what do we need to do? And I suppose in the instance of people under 18 being involved in criminality generally, you know, is it time that we start sanctioning the parents more robustly and try and get through to them that way? So I suppose moving beyond that individual tragedy, more generally speaking, because we can't, guards are never going to be able to chase people the wrong way up a motorway. That's they're just going to end up tied up with the ombudsman for years if they were to do that. So what do we need to do to tackle specific issues like this? And where young people are involved in criminality, do we need to start sanctioning the parents?
Yeah, well, probably need to read back a bit. When something goes wrong, and we tend to straight away look at the guards and blame the guards. There's not enough guards. They should not know. They should have caught these people and all this. But I think we need to go back. We need to teach young people that criminality is wrong. Doing the things that happened in County Kildare, driving up motorways the wrong way, is wrong. Getting behind a car and driving recklessly at high speed is wrong. Using your phone is wrong. And we need to start that at an early age. And Mary said it earlier on, and I sit on the board in one of the local schools.
But Jerry, if you don't mind, Jerry, it's quite possible, generally speaking, that maybe much of that education might be in school, but maybe those children aren't attending school regularly, or maybe they're bunking off when that type of education is going on. So, you know, if we're going to go back, we probably need to go right back to perhaps maybe the upbringing, parental responsibility, you know, discipline, school attendance, because there's no point, is there, having education in school if maybe the kids that need it most aren't actually in school?
Yeah, and that's right. And there has to be parental responsibility. My parents ensured that I went to school all the time. When I get married and had children, that come on to me. I ensured that my children went to school, you know, and you can't be with them 24/7. I accept that. But you set the parameters, you set the baseline there, and you hope then that the example that you're showing and you're given, that will rub off on them and that they will become better citizens. So, like, it's of course, there has to be some parental responsibility. And I've said it in the past, that parents who knowingly let their children run amok, be involved in criminality and turn a blind eye to it and sometimes assist them, yes, there should be a repercussion for them parents. Of course there should be. But generally it's about, you know, how do we, you know, create a better sort of lifestyle of young people going forward. And so it's about engaging them. It's about talking to them. It's about showing good example. I think we have brilliant schools at the moment. I think we have great teachers who are up and willing to do that. And what we need to do is get that message across, right across, parents included. And if it needs to, if some parents aren't going to listen to that and they're allowing their children to become turn into criminals and do what they do, then yes, of course, if they're of an age, they should be sanctioned. Yeah, I have no problem with that. But we as a society also have to try our very, very best to lead by example and give.
So,
you know,
just to be clear, so say for instance, I had a 15-year-old who I knew was knowingly going out, robbing people, nicking cars, putting people in danger. Do you think that I should be should I have any criminal responsibility for that child?
Yeah, you probably, if you're aware of it and you're doing nothing about it. But you see, I'm mindful today also, Greg, that there's thousands of young people getting their leaving cert results today who've went to school, whose parents have done an excellent job with them. And hopefully, and I wish them well today, and I hope they get the results that they worked hard for. So sometimes we can focus too much on those young people who are involved in criminality and not recognise the vast, vast majority of our young people are law-abiding, hard-working, and are looking to, you know, the future with, you know, some sense of
course. I think that's not what we're doing. We do recognise that, but we're actually trying to have a conversation as to what we can do to support those children to ensure that they can become the best versions of themselves. We're not condemning them or separating them out from others. that, you know, and we will talk about that separately, but I do take your point. Nicola Mahan, is there anything else, you know, from a judicial point of view that we need to be doing or any gaps there that need to be plugged in your view?
Well, parents have to stop being friends with their children. That would be one for me. And when they are behaving badly, you punish them. For me, if it was my 15-year-old, I would be they would be at the Garda station and I would be reporting them myself. And I wouldn't have any issue with that because if they're going out terrorising and you have no control of it at home and they're not listening to you, I would seek help and report them myself. And I wouldn't have any issue with that.
But if you weren't inclined to do that and your child was running amok, do you believe that you should be fined, you should be found criminally responsible for their actions? Or I'm not sure if there's a precedent for that either, by the way.
If you aren't doing everything in your power to stop it, yes, I do believe that you should be punished and you should be fined because it's your duty of care to teach your children right from wrong and hope for the best that they do listen. And if you don't teach them that and you're not helping them to stay on the right track, well, you have to look at yourself.
What do you think, Mary Hart?
Well, I agree with both Gerry and Nicola. Yes, there is a thing called parental responsibility. Now, how you apply that, you know, what law that you have to introduce that if someone under 16 breaks the law and you knew that they were doing what they were doing, then there should be some form of penalty that, you know, whatever it has to be. But we're great at, you know, suggesting new laws and new legislation. It's how you, do you implement them? How do you actually monitor that is the problem. And I think, you know, we have to go back to, you know, when I worked in Derry years ago, there was a course called, you know, it was parental course. It was the skills in how to parent. And I think that is absolutely what we need again. It's not hard to do. We've got plenty of family resource centres around the country. They could be applied there. And those parents whose children are running amok and, you know, I should know where my 15-year-old is at 2 o'clock in the morning and they've scarping up a motorway at great speed. There's something terribly wrong with the parent there. So that parent, and of course we're looking at a society that, you know, drugs have been all over the place for as long as the, you know, back to the 80s, you know, so those are possibly parents that have just never had a chance themselves. That is not excusing them, but that is, we need to look at how we can reach into the younger people and parenting skills for those who have children. You know, it's, you know, there's plenty of laws. I mean, if you think, you know, I know they've been looking for, you know, that there's the murder should be applied to somebody who drives down the motorway. We don't need that. You know, we have driving, you know, careless driving causing death. You know, that carries the penalty. But there was a case in Donegal about 12 years ago where there was a man who was driving a car recklessly and manslaughter was applied. And, you know, he was convicted of manslaughter. That law is there. There's no need for us to be changing the law at all in any way to do that. But only one of those people in that car could have been charged with that, with manslaughter, you know, had they survived. So again, you know, when you get into a car knowingly that there's going to be driving, what laws can you apply? So it's basically starting at the very, as Gerry said, it's starting at the very beginning and teaching parents how to parent if they can't do it and getting young people in schools. I mean, there used to be a great course in Donegal of learning how to work a car, how to, you know, the mechanics of a motor engine, you know, showing all of those things. And I think that should be obligatory as much as any other subject in schools nowadays. And also what obligatory is to show them the people that are making money out of social media are the giants that are billionaires in the likes of, you know, America. Mm-hmm. They don't give a toss about how many likes you get. They want money in their pockets. So, okay, you know, those are the things you need to show people, to be cynical themselves about who's making money off them.
With new figures showing a 30% drop in Catholic baptisms over the last decade, is this simply a reflection of Ireland's falling birth rate? That is a factor, of course. Or are we seeing the official end of cultural Catholicism as young parents make a conscious break from church traditions? Unpack that one for us, Nicola Mann.
Well, it is falling birth rate, but definitely has been a change in Ireland. But fewer young people are deciding not to baptise their child. But for me, I do think it is seeing an end of culture capitalism. But it's, for me, what I'm seeing is it's more intentional Catholic community that we're seeing. People want, people who are baptizing their child want to and are in their faith. And that's basically probably a better faith than somebody just doing it for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, there are those that would be in favour of, if it is even a smaller actual group of Catholics, that they'd be more inclined to practice, that they wouldn't be there just for the big three or four.
Yeah, definitely. That's what I'm seeing in my community anyway. I do think there is going to be a shift in Ireland with people falling back to their faith.
I wonder, we heard some commentary from the head of the Ona Institute there yesterday suggesting that maybe the church, and all churches might have their issues in relation to this, but just focusing on the Catholic Church for now, that is the church doing enough to engage younger people, you know, to actively try and get them through the doors and engaged in their birth religion potentially?
I do think, well, I'm involved with the Casero community and the Brifo and Donegal Diocese and the Derry Diocese, and we have seen a huge increase in young people looking to join us, and as you can see, it's feeding on to their children, and families are going back to Mass and are practicing their faith, and it's great to see. And I do think people are there because they want to be there. And we have lost, we have pulled 3 weekends a year for the Donegal Diocese and 3 weekends a year for Derry Diocese, and we don't have enough room for them. And then we IFC also in my own community here, there is a youth club for faith, and that's packed to the doors. So I do think there's going to be a great increase in faith in Ireland.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think the general consensus is there is a mixture of declining birth rates, but also, too, there are people actively choosing not to baptise their children if they're born into the Catholic faith. Mary Hart, what do you think's going on here?
Well, as they say, there's lies, and damn statistics, so it's very difficult to read what the 30% drop in baptism is. Is it because of fewer children? Of course there is. Families in Ireland are having fewer children. I'm the eldest of 9, but I have 2. So there's a big difference there in that generational swipe. Look, is it a bad thing that children are not baptised? I can't say, I think it's entirely, it's up to the parents of young children. I don't think you can force them to join any religion. And I also think that they have a right to say, I don't really see institutional religions. They may have their own beliefs and their own faiths within themselves and internalize it. And that doesn't make them bad people because they're not having their children baptized. Yes, maybe the Catholic Church could do a little bit more. They could allow priests to get married, and that would mean that they have much better reach into society. But that is not going to happen in my lifetime. So, the Catholic Church may be moaning about this. Other people may be moaning about it, but I don't think there's any reason to moan about it, because I think it's actually a good thing rather than a bad thing.
Mm. Is that not a bit hands off? I wonder in other cultures.
They shouldn't get baptized. No, I agree.
I don't mean you or your opinion. I mean, just if that's the way it is in a society, right? Do you know that? There probably are other religions that would actively sort of try and ensure that the children at least get the start in the religion and then can make their own minds up. Sorry, that wasn't a slight at you, Mary. I'm just saying, is it just another area of parenting where we're taking a step back and saying, well, sure, let's just see how the cards fall?
Yeah, well, I mean, is institutional religion good? It gives you a pathway to a belief system. But other people have belief systems that don't have any belief in another life, so there are pathways, and there are millions of religions. And you should know that I, living beside the Bethany Stone Circle, there's 5,000 years of religion on my doorstep, and it hasn't been the Catholic Church. It's only in Ireland since about 800 AD. So, that's not even 1,200, actually. Prior to that, it was the Celtic Church. So, we go through somersaults and cyclical belief systems, and who knows 100 years from now what religion might be the main religion in this country.
Well, we'd find out with the, God forbid, the launch of a third world war, because everyone would be trying to find their safety backup plan in that situation. It's just dependent where they might go. What do you think, Jerry, in relation to all of this? I'm very much like sort of live and let live, and it's I don't feel motivated to say that anyone should do this, that, or that in terms of personal belief systems. But anyway, I don't know what your views are.
No, it's funny because I'm just back from the daughter just come back from Australia, and they had their second child there in Australia. And
congratulations.
We were just talking about it the weekend. I was down visiting Claire, and because the second boy isn't baptized yet. So
were you putting the pressure on?
No, not at all. No, I was just come up in a conversation, and I said, we'll get it done now. So, busy life, and we'll get around it, and blah, blah, blah. And look, if there's 30%, I'd say a lot of that is down to families being smaller. And the other thing is, it's not a priority, I don't think, in a lot of people's lives, because there is, when you have children and then all the extra responsibilities come on, and there's a time when you had to rush then and get the Wayne baptized and the first couple of weeks and all of that, then we all live happily ever after and the chapel looks after us. You know, the Catholic faith needs to get into the real world, needs to get into the modern world. I hear what Nicola's saying, but that would be my experience of more people going, particularly young people, going back to chapel. It's not there. I mean, I would go to Mass, and I just need to be honest.
I think you're a bit of a doubting.
Because it's hell and damnation. Yeah. It's not dealing with the here and now. It's not.
I think you're being a bit of a doubting Thomas, if you don't mind me saying so, because Nicola sees this with her own eyes.
Yeah, well, no, that's fine. You know, everybody has their own vision and picture. But I'm just saying, I don't think, when we go to Mass now, I don't, just recently it started again, the hell and damnation, and if we don't do this and don't do that, then we're never going to see eternity. And I mean, nobody's ever told us what eternity is, well, or showed us what it is. They've told us, but we're sure nobody has any picture of it.
I can't believe it. So, it sounds with all due respect, Jerry, it sounds like this question has come up while you're having a crisis of faith, if the truth be told.
I think the Catholic Church is having a crisis of faith.
Okay, yeah.
I don't think they know how to deal with the modern world. Mm. There's so much wrong going on in the world today, and they're nearly afraid to talk about it.
Okay, stay there, because it's actually really...
How they want to engage with their parishioners, I think they're going about it the wrong way. That's a personal opinion.
And that's what... And it's actually really, really quite interesting. Nicola, what's your response to that? I mean, I get what Jerry is saying. You know, you go there and you want to walk out with a spring in your step and feel that you've done your duty, probably the wrong way of saying it, and you're coming out there... crapping yourself.
Well, there is times that you go, I go on to Mass and the gospel or the homily is, well, I find that you take something from it. And if you're not in a good place yourself and you're not being you're not abiding by the Catholic Church rules, you do come away feeling, I need to get the confessions, or I need to do this, I need to do that. That's my...
So, in other words, if you are living the way it is, you walk out there going, well, he wasn't talking about me. I'm all right. Is that what we're talking about here?
Well, it could be, but, probably there is certain priests that could meet people where they're at, and they are a bit, staunch and hard. But then there is also the other end. There is some fantastic priests. It's like every vocation, you have great teachers, you have great, but for me, our parish priests are great. People I go to are great. What can I say?
Nothing, that's fine. And you know what? Your opinion and Jerry's opinion and Mary's opinion, the lovely thing is they can all live in the same space and no one's necessarily right or wrong.
I think it's very special to pass it on to my children.
You referenced it a little earlier on, or it was referenced a little earlier on, leaving cert results day. For some children, for many of them, it's just the most important day they've ever had in their entire lives, which is... unbelievable, because the further you get from this day, the less important it gets. But Mary Hart, hopefully all those that have sat their exams get the results that they want. But I think we live in a time now where we have more options than we ever had to progress yourself in life, even if your results aren't quite where you wanted them to be.
Yeah, you know, I wish everybody that are opening their envelopes this morning and their parents that everybody that, you know, there are not tears. There will be tears, but I wish that the young people could remember, even though I do think I still have nightmares about my Leaving Cert that I forgot to sit one of the exams. Yeah, I mean, it is, there are more options. And thankfully, we're starting to see, you know, that apprenticeships are as important as going on to, you know, a university and an academic, you know, career.
And I think with sort of the loss of 6,500 tech jobs as well too this year in 1 year alone, and with the advancements in AI, tricky decisions as to where you want to go, because you're dedicating 3, 4, 5 years of your life, Mary. And, you know, it's a big shout at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I did in another life. I was a teacher in an all-boys comprehensive school in Dublin. And, you know, I appreciate trying to, you know, guide yourself after the Leaving Cert. But to be honest, I was 30 before I knew what I wanted to do, you know, really. So I think young people should be encouraged to explore the world, explore as much as they can, and not jump in to say, oh, people saying to them, oh, what are you going to do? What are you going to be? What are you going to, you know, that's, they're too young to be thinking of a long life career. They can't, because they haven't had the experience of it. And I do think young people should be encouraged, you know, to actually explore, you know, and do what you like, do what you love, not what people think you should be doing, and putting pressure on yourself and everybody around you. Mm. Look, all we can do, we have a great country in terms of education, in terms of guiding young people. I mean, I think we have a superb education system, and that's why we're so successful as a country at the moment, and long may that last.
Yeah, some of the results aren't going to be the same as they were previously, not because the young people and older people aren't studying and doing as well, it's just because they were artificially inflated during COVID. But a big day, Nicola Mahon, a big day for the young ones, not so young, mums and dads, granny and granddads.
It is a big day for them. God, hopefully they all do really well. But as Mary said, there is loads of options for people who don't do well. There's apprenticeships, there's courses that you can go and get on, the foundation degree and stuff like that there that you can do, to get the marks that you need to get under the courses. Like, I know I had to go back and do that after mine's. There is options there, but for the parents, I think we probably need to relax a bit around it for them, because we can be more anxious than them. I know I was anyway with my 19-year-old, who was a nightmare.
It's all coming out. Gerry, I need you now to dig deep into your past, Gerry, and...
I left school with no qualifications, but I got a
same
job
as, and, by the way, just in case you think I'm having a go.
Thankfully, through that job, I was able to access an apprenticeship, which I fulfilled, and it was the best decision I made. You know, as Mary said, you know, it's not all about academia. There's people out there who have practical skills.
I'm really pleased to
be the smartest, but they are great with their hands, you know, are developing ideas and design and such. So DTB here in Donegal now are opening up new apprenticeship developments here in the county, okay, which will give opportunity. We can't get tradespeople now at all.
It's tough.
You can't get a plumber, an electrician, a builder, you know, it's very hard. So there's great scope there for young people now, whether you do well or unwell in your Leaving Cert. So my message would be, don't despair. Just take a big, deep breath, look about you, see what's suitable for you. And there's loads of opportunities out there at the minute, I think, for young people, certainly more than when I was growing up. But I know for me, anyway, getting on the apprenticeship was a great thing, and it certainly set me up through my
years of life. I left school at, I think, 14 and a half or 15. I think it was Manpower was the option. Is it Manpower back then? I don't know.
Anko. Anko and Manpower, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But now there are so many different ways. You know, I'd get into green energy, to be honest. I'd do an electricity course or an engineering course in that, because there's just so many jobs going. Mary Hart, always a pleasure. Have a lovely weekend.
Thank you. Yes, and thank you. And I want to invite Jerry in particular, all of you, but Jerry, you have to come into Bethany Stone Circle to one of my little pagan talks, and then you might find your pathway.
He's not a lost soul. He was just saying the recent masses of the recent. You've got an invite up to Nicola as well, Jerry. Thanks very much, Mary Hart. Look after yourself. Nicola, a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
Okay, and God be with you, Jerry. Thanks so much for joining us. Okay, that was our Friday panel, and we do appreciate the guests, Councillor Jerry McMonagall, Mary Hart and Nicola Mahan. Lots of you messaging and texting in. We'll get to those shortly. Just talking about the Leaving Cert results too, I would know too that life is really tough, and today's going to be a particular tough day for, well, I know, three families, and I'm sure many of you know as well, young people who should be with us, but for one reason or another aren't. And this is another one of those milestone days for mums and dads and granny and granddads and brothers and sisters, that maybe a young person in their life was lost, and that envelope won't go open today. So while there's going to be joy, and while there's going to be disappointment, which I hope will give way to joy, there's also going to be some, you know, really difficult days for some people out there. And all of you, we'll keep you, all of you, in our thoughts.
Where your opinion matters. The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Yes, it does indeed. Thank you for all of the texts coming in so far this morning. Hi, Greg. I know a family who tried to get their child christened but were turned down because they're not regular churchgoers. That's a problem for the church if that is happening. On baptism here again, no one wants to follow the church, but they want the big occasions, first communion, confirmation, weddings, funerals. I wonder if the church refused access to people who didn't actually practice their faith, how would it go? Well, you see, what we're seeing now is those people, probably as a result of comments like that, aren't actually getting baptised in the first place in the church. And you perhaps, as a churchgoer, might have to say, is that good or bad? Because people are starting to sort of make that decision themselves. On the issue of Tusla, when a child hits its teenage years, sadly the friend's opinion become more important than the parents. If you don't have good communication with your young child and instilled good morals, then it will be much harder on their child. Another taking drugs now and they're high as kites. They don't even know what they're doing. It's very sad. That's a general comment, I should say. The Garda cars need a big front steel bumper and ram these cars before it gets to the motorway. Again, you have to understand that for a lot of joyriders, I actually remember when there was a campaign to get rid of that word. Joyriding was so popular that people wanted you to stop using the word joyriding because it glamorized it. Isn't it funny? This is not necessarily a new conversation. But part of it is the chase from the guards, you know, evading that big bumper that you talk of. Another caller says, it's the government to blame. If you give a young person a good hard slap for doing wrong, now you are in court. Another, so many families are now single parent homes. That's the issue. Listen, I know single parent family homes and their children are the absolute best. I don't think you can judge people so broadly, in my opinion, if you don't mind me saying so. Teaching children right or wrong is one thing, but if the parents have no morals, then how can they pass on good teachings to their children? It's about the disintegration of society, the breakup of families, one-parent families and absent fathers, secular society encouraging all of this because they hate Christian teachings, which puts huge emphasis on the family unit, which are obedient to the teachings and Christ. Okay, that's one view. I remember a government minister driving down a motorway in the wrong direction. Don't recall. Every parent should do a mandatory parenting course, plus any separated parent should do a specific parenting apart course. Again, there's this presumption of single parents not being able to raise children as if it's a broad stroke. We have an awful lot of single parents out there that do amazing work, and then we have couples who do nothing and really bad work. I think we always make this mistake of turning on each other when we're trying to deal with something. So we don't blame the RSA. We don't blame the government. We don't blame Tusla. We don't blame the condition of the roads. A lot of the texts so far are blaming your neighbour, your friend or your cousin or your sister. And it gives, firstly, it's demonstrably untrue, because I can tell you right now, I know couples who struggle to control their children, and I know single parents that have no issues whatsoever. So making a broad stroke like that, firstly, it turns us against each other, makes people feel bad, and also I think it misses the point of who is actually in control in a set-up society that we have problems like this. A caller says, when you get a dog, you must be a responsible dog owner. When you have a child, you must be a responsible parent. And if your child is 15 and is joyriding, etc., then you have failed as a parent. Another, should we not consider that these issues all actually come back to the cost of living crisis? Nearly every parent I know these days are caring for their children, but also working full time. How are they supposed to be present for every moment of a child's behaviour when we're also expected to keep a full-time job? I agree that there are parental responsibility and it exists, but the time we have to implement this is seriously limited compared to years ago when there was normally one parent who stayed at home. Another caller says there are six-year-olds in Donegal playing Grand Theft Auto and being conditioned by hours of playing into risky, thrilling behaviour, low morals and lack of empathy. Where are the parents? Where are the government and societal controls? Nowhere to be seen. And now we've the juggernaut of AI here with more to come. God help the future generation. Another, Tusla are dysfunctional and that's clear. It's down to a lack of management and staff. We only have to look at the debacle of the new children's hospital. No one accountable. Public service in this country is disgraceful, and regardless of the failures, there's no accountability. Accountability here is non-existent. And another caller says, this behaviour is a reflection of how children are reared. Parenting doesn't happen anymore. Another caller says, blame everyone except the five that did it. The others weren't under Tusla's care. What's their excuse? I understand exactly where you're coming from. But we live in a society where teenagers will do this and do other activity, and it doesn't always end in tragedy. We're getting cars nicked left, right and centre all over the place. But if we just blame, how does that, because that means, right, that all of the responsibility, all the blame goes on whomever was involved. Then we move on and then it happens again. And what happens next? Or how do we address this growing culture of the theft of cars, evading Gardaí, etc., etc.? If we just focus on, you know, blame, we learn no lessons from it at all. Hi, Greg. I think it's totally unfair to say comments about the horrendous crash was all about anti-traveller sentiment until the travelling community are made adhere to the same rules as law-abiding citizens and face the same penalties and law enforcement as law-abiding citizens. All the negative comments are true. We've seen the videos on the roads of the total disregard for law and order these people have. But there were five people in that car, God rest their souls, and they weren't all from the travelling community. But the criticism is that I'm seeing online primarily is towards the children from the travelling community. Another caller says the Garda. Now I've read that one. Let's see. Loads and loads coming through. Right, we have a podcast we release for you every Friday at 11 a.m. I'll get to more comments a little later on, where we introduce interview guests, musical, sport, politics, none of the above, medicine, education, just, you know, people with amazing stories of resilience, of loss, of coping. It's a great show. I'm really proud of it. We're proud of it. Caroline Orr and myself work really hard on it. Caroline Orr researches and produces the podcast, whilst you don't hear her voice. Her fingerprints are all over everything we do here on this program. And our guest this week is Jason Quigley. Jason Quigley's a remarkable man. He's achieved so much. You know, he's headlined boxing shows on DAZN, the global home of boxing. He's fought for world championships. He's collected titles here, there and everywhere. And now he's involved in training with Andy Lee, who's arguably the best trainer in the sport. He's been over at all of these shows in the Middle East, backing some of his fighters. And also, too, he started up, you know, his own boxing company where he wants to give fighters an opportunity to develop and grow and become the superstars of the future. And many of them are from Donegal. So if you want to get on a bandwagon, now is the time to get on this one. There's more shows coming up in Donegal in the not too distant future. But, of course, the big fight coming up in Ireland is on the 5th of September. That's Katie Taylor's swan song. It's in Croke Park, 80,000 people, broadcast on free-to-air television across the country. And I'd heard whispers that it was a card that Jason Quigley wanted to get on. So, as I say, it's a wide-ranging conversation. But I started off by asking him this question.
That you were looking to get on the bill. I was...
Did you put the feelers out?
The
feelers... Because, I mean, who whether active or... I know you're in a little bit of a hiatus at the moment, but if you're an Irish boxer, especially with your record,
yeah,
that's a card you want to be on, isn't it?
Yeah, so the way that this came about was Luke Keeler, another Irish fighter, messaged me on Instagram and was like, look, I don't know where you're at. Are you retired? Are you not retired? What's going on? But I would love a fight on the Croke Park card. Would you be interested?
Right.
And straight up, I says, absolutely. If the money's right, if everything goes to plan, I'm up for it. I'll 100% get back in the gym, and that's something that I can get.
But I think what's interesting, what you said there, is if the money's right.
Yeah.
So in other words, the spectacle of the event would not be enough for you to go back in there and take punches to the head.
Like, I don't want to come across... I don't want to come across a certain way when I say this, like, but, like, the event is unbelievable. It's historic.
But your name... The other guys are great, but you've a bigger box office.
Yeah, like
I don't mean I know it's hard to say it, but the name Jason Quigley. I mean, you're a former world title contender, Oscar De La Hoya boxer. You know, you're not a journeyman,
exactly.
And as I say, I don't mean that badly.
No, and that's
you have to know your own value.
But
don't
that's
you?
The standard that I hold myself to, and of course it would be unbelievable to be on that card. It would be an honour to be on that card. But I have to look after myself, my family, and my life, my health. Do you know what I mean?
Have you always known your own value then in that regard? And that will come in terms of, you know, contract negotiations, what fights to take, whether you'll cut short preparation because of blah, blah. Like, when did you learn your own value that you could make that kind of a decision?
Probably in the last couple of years of my career. You know, as a young, hungry... not say immature kid, but as a young, hungry fighter coming up, like, money means nothing to you. It's like, I'll get into that ring, I'll fight anybody, I'll fight him for nothing. No. And that's the progression through boxing, you know, for a lot of fighters, that, you know, you get into it with that hunger, then next thing, you start to see the money that can be made, you start to see the life that you can make for yourself, you can start to see, for some instance, that generational wealth.
Yeah, and we go on and have a very interesting conversation. And that generational wealth, and when we talk of generational wealth, and we're back live, by the way, now, when we talk of generational wealth, it would be, you know, that effectively he would make, Jason, as far as I'm aware, is a wealthy man, but that you'd make enough money whereby your kids and maybe their kids would never have to worry about money. And that's what generational wealth is in this context. And there was a point whereby, just as Katie Taylor was about to hit the big time, that Jason was effectively in negotiations, or at least his team were in negotiations, to join the same management company that was looking after her. He doesn't have many regrets, but perhaps one of the regrets is that those plans fell through for various reasons, and it caused tensions within the camp, and as you will hear in the podcast, between he and his father. But it's a wide-ranging conversation. If you love boxing, hopefully you'll love it, but also, too, if you're just interested in personal stories, it's there for you as well. So that's the latest Greg Hughes podcast, live for you to listen to from 11 a.m. You can watch it on YouTube too. Just search out the Greg Hughes podcast wherever you get your podcasts to listen or watch. And you can also listen, of course, at its home on highlandradio.com. Thank you so much for all of your texts, calls and comments coming into the program. It is greatly appreciated. Just to remind you as well, by the way, that if you happen to be listening to the podcast of this program or the overnight repeat, feel free to share your views, text or email, and we can pick them up and carry them into the next live show. My son done well and went to college, and it wasn't for him. Eventually, he'd done an electrical apprenticeship and is now doing well abroad, overseeing jobs. College is not the be-all and end-all. There's something for everyone out there. Indeed, and I think there's this presumption that everyone does or must go to college, but that doesn't, that figures don't suggest that. Is it 65% go? On the issue of vapes, my young lad has been taking these vapes and has most definitely developed mental health issues. He's out causing all types of trouble and got involved with a group who are stealing and racing cars like it's fun. We've tried everything to get him under control, but at this stage, me and his mother accepted that he's going to jail. And the quicker the better. He might be safer there. Each day, we are waiting on that call to say he's either dead from his vaping or drugs or killed in a stolen car. Can you imagine that position there from mum and dad? They say they've tried everything to get him under control and they see him being arrested and sent to prison as the best option, probably because they know where he is and that he'd be safe. And that's the reality. I think that's the flip side that we don't often necessarily talk about, that parents sometimes do try their best, but it's hard to say. A ban on under-18s using e-scooters due to be introduced this month has been deferred following advice from the Attorney General. And that says it all about this country. Well, it was all very rushed, isn't it? I must dig into that to see exactly what the ins and outs of that was. Just to let you know, tomorrow, Saturday, is a huge day for Inishowen Rugby Club as they open their fabulous new pitch in another major step forward in their development. Minister Charlie McConnell Logue, Minister of State, will cut the ribbon, followed by a match between Inishowen and the Donegal Select. It all gets underway at 2 o'clock tomorrow at Moss Road, Carndonagh. Refreshments available and you're all invited. Fair play. Hopefully you have a great day and I'm sure you will. Did anyone watch the Healy Ray documentary last night? No, and it was on my radar, but I didn't see it. This caller says I was glued to it, and in particular the people who spoke about getting operations because the brothers campaigned on their behalf. Two people said that their wives would be dead had it not been for them. Here I am in Donegal sitting on a waiting list, and despite making calls to our politicians, I'm still waiting. Maybe I should call the Healy Rays. They're real working politicians in this country. Right, we're going to head now to Brendan Devaney, who wears multiple caps. Of course, a presenter of the DL Debate here. He's also, of course, a familiar voice on commentary, co-commentary, not just here, but right across the country. But he's also someone who's incredibly passionate about what Israel is responsible for, the general acceptance that we're responsible for genocide. A couple of days ago, one of the leading people in their country literally stated that they need to be killing 40, 50, 60 Gazaans a night, and it really didn't have any impact at all. Such a shocking statement to make. Brendan, thanks for joining us. I do appreciate your time.
No problem, Greg.
Right, so how big is the movement for the GEA to drop Allianz? And is it because of Allianz? And tease it out for us, Allianz's connection to Israel. Why is this such a big issue?
Yeah, Greg, well, you touched on it there, the evil of Israel and the genocide that we've seen happening here. And really, Greg, there's a real web of evil around the world, from corrupt governments to, you know, big business, mainstream media, big pharma. You're seeing it all unravel now. But the centre point of a lot of that is through Zionism, and that's control of Israel and what it's doing in this genocide. And so that all happens, Greg, because of money. It has to be funded. And the biggest company funding them is Allianz. You know, Allianz is a massive billion-dollar cash-rich company, but they're completely morally bankrupt. And they've put $2.7 billion into Israeli war bonds that the Israeli government have said themselves have used in this genocide. They've also funded companies complicit in the genocide, the likes of Elbit Systems, the biggest weapons manufacturer, to the tune of $7.3 billion. So they are completely in bed with this tyrannical Israeli regime. And that same company now is sponsoring the GAA. So the wave of movement across 800 ex-county players and current players signed a petition last year, and then yesterday we delivered up well over 200 All-Ireland winners. We chose to just for a different angle this time. I was up there, unfortunately, Greg, I wasn't actually on that list, but, you know, I had a load of our 92 and 2012 guys on there, and our hurlers as well, Christy Ring hurlers as well. So, Greg, it was just another motion to push this forward, to show the level of, I suppose, unhappiness that the GAA world, you know, an organisation born out of an oppression to protect our culture, protect our language. We are now in the chain and linked in to a company now that is destroying another nation out in the Middle East.
Do you think this is what we see in other parts of the world, sports washing, whereby big money is invested, to, I suppose, try and alter the public's opinion of a company.
That sounds great. I mean, on top of everything else that Allianz are, they're hypocritical. Whenever Russia attacked Ukraine, there was a whole load of financial incentives put into companies out there and different financial backing to help Ukrainians. Meanwhile, they did nothing in Gaza. And if you look at the kill rate of children in the war in Ukraine, it's 0.03%. Now, in Gaza, it's 37.7%. So they're actually targeting children. You know, and when you look at how horrible wars are, they're usually adults, men, normally fighting other men. This is children that have been bombed, burned and starved. And we're watching this being live streamed. And meanwhile, companies and governments are sitting on their hands and doing nothing. So the fact that an organisation like the GA is still being sponsored and being insured by this company is absolutely disgraceful. And their attempts to silence us and to, you know, push us away, it's only growing stronger and stronger. And last week I spoke to Brian Cody, greatest hurling manager ever, came on board. I spoke to Richie Power, eight All-Irelands, came on board. They're two people I've only met twice. And yet we have a load of our high-profile players who have decided not to even engage with me, some of them in their own county, Greg. And I'm putting a motion now to Donegal clubs. It's coming up soon. If any of the secretaries of Peter Rose are listening, it's yes or no with Allianz. We're at this point now, Greg. We're not leaving it to people to have to come up with their own motions and to go to county boards with their own motions and be seconded in that. It's a simple motion that's coming to all the clubs in Donegal. It's yes or no, Allianz. And we're going to take that then to Congress in February next year.
The GAA might say they've already dealt with this. Following a review by its Ethics and Integrity Commission, the Central Council overwhelmingly voted to maintain the partnership. The Commission concluded that Allianz Ireland operates as a separate corporate entity with no direct involvement, and ending the deal would carry substantial legal financial risks without altering alternative or underwriting realities. It's worth up to €1 million for the GAA, but they've said they're locked into this now. The Allianz they deal with aren't the same Allianz that you talk of, and they've gone through it all. They've weighed up the pros and cons. Now, might argue as well that they claim to be a grassroots organisation. They need to start listening to the grassroots, however those cards might fall.
Yeah, well, that's an insult, Greg, to basic intelligence. To say that Allianz Ireland had nothing to do with Allianz Munich. Now, Allianz Ireland sent a minimum of 100 million dividend to Munich every year. That money then, a percentage of that money is going to them as really war bonds. So you tell me how you pull them things apart. It's absolutely ridiculous for people to try and play that card. Allianz Ireland have come after me personally as well, Greg, which is the type of company we're dealing with here. And when you look at that ethics committee, there was five people on it and two people of high regard recused themselves. There's only three people left. Joanne Kehoe and the Sprat fellow, the same Sprat minister that cancelled our patients' flights to Dublin. That's the same guy. So these three people who work for the government are the people that we trusted with the ethics committee, and there's no ethics mention of ethics in it. Greg, this was Allianz propaganda that the GAA regurgitated. And the big problem with the GAA, and it's a problem with all large organisations, is when the money men get to the top to make the decisions, morals go out the window. But, and that's where we're at in the GAA.
But I get exactly where you're coming from, but if we dug deep, how many other companies could we link back to funding what Israel are doing or sports washing their reputation? Where does it end? You know what I mean? Now, I know Allianz is the head of the snake as far as you would see it, but, you know, Israel's a very influential country. And as I say, go down the high street, any high street, and you'll see the links.
You see, well, gang, here's the counter-argument to that, okay? First of all, Allianz are way out on their own. The next company in their field would be AXA with the biggest exposure, and they'd half the monetary exposure. After Albanese's first report, they started to divest. They fell out of the Israeli economy. They took money out of banks. They tried, Greg, and the try word is the key here. There's a boycott list on there, and there's a lot of companies on it, Greg. You can check my Facebook and you can check online.
I'm familiar with it, yeah.
Yeah. So you got to try, Greg. It's up to you to try, but by not trying, you are complicit in this genocide, no matter what way you look at it. So if you are supporting those companies, you got at some stage morally say, well, listen, that's a morally bankrupt company. I am paying into that, so I am therefore supporting this genocide, mm-hmm. and that's where it's at. Now, right. There's no way of dividing these two things, and that's why.
No, I do understand, but and as I say, I'm not for a second trying to catch you out. But where does it end, right? So you know, I mean, at the end of the day, America, and even closer to home, but America is effectively facilitating, you know, what the Israelis are doing. They couldn't do what they're doing without America, I don't think. Croke Park hosts massive American football games. You know, it's like the degrees of separation. Where does it end? You know,
okay. I wouldn't say where does it end. I say where does it start for you. Yeah. I'm looking at my family every night. We say our prayers every night. We pray for them, we kids of Gaza. What can I do that's positive towards them? Where do I start?
You can't do everything, but you do something.
The American government, as we see with AIPAC, is completely corrupt. They're bought and paid for. Now, that is beginning to change in America because people are standing up and they're saying, what can I do? Who can I vote for? How can I stop this money that's been funneled into Israel that has been used, as I said, to predominantly murder children?
Okay, right. Thank you very much, Brendan, for that. Sure. We do appreciate your time, and it's a movement that's gone from strength to strength. Just one quick question as it relates to the Donegal clubs. How do you furnish that? Is that a congress, or how do you get a motion up in congress, or what way do you write to them and sort of aggregate their responses?
The Donegal clubs will be getting an email, and it'll be a simple yes or no, and I will include on that, Greg, all those people I mentioned there. Some of the great people of our GA, nearly all the 92 squad, people like Brian McEnough, as I say, our top hurlers, our top footballers, our people from 2012, they'll be on that list that they have said yes to drop aliens. So the clubs must answer the question, Greg. It's a simple question. It's yes or no. And when I get the full, with the clubs' answers all back, that goes to the county board. The county board then must discuss it. They have a mandate, and that mandate must then go to Congress. So that's where we're at now, Greg. It's a simple yes or no.
Tiny wee question in relation to that. Is that fair, though? Because you are effectively dragging every club in the county into politics, because they either have to say yes and be seen to be involved, but if they say no, they might be seen to be complicit or in favour of Israel. Is that fair to them?
We're already dragged into politics, the fact that we have Allianz banner around our grounds, Greg.
That's
the way it is. There's no other way of coming away from this, Greg. Either we are an organisation that has morals, stands for what's right, or we stand for nothing. And currently, with Allianz banner above our grounds and sponsoring our sport, we stand for nothing. It's high time the GAA people and the clubs stood up. And the ordinary people in the street that I talked to, Greg, if you explain this situation, they'll say drop Allianz. That has to happen.
A couple of callers want to know, you know, you can stand in the middle of a pitch surrounded by Allianz boarding and hoarding and it's behind you. Or you can sit up in the commentary box and, you know, Allianz ads either side of what you're saying, or people can see it. How do you square that circle, Brendan? As I say, I have to put it to you because I don't want to read them when you're off air. Do you get me?
Fine. I would put that back to people. What about the people that I've reached out to that have sat their hands in this? Because they're afraid of some way of stepping up, because it might hurt their money. It might hurt them in terms of media. Do I work for BBC, Greg? So I'm putting my neck on the line here by coming out and speaking up against this evil, because it's the right thing to do. And if in some way that hurts me, if someone says to me now, that's your job finished for them, Greg, I have no problem. I look at my kids at night. I do what's right. So I'm standing up against Allianz. So the people that are in there that aren't doing it, that's the issue. I mean, why you would ask me about that? Mm. I mean, that's a ridiculous.
Well, ironically, in a way, it is a protest, because you are speaking against them, but putting yourself out into the public eye. You know, another word, saying the ball's in your court. If you've got an issue, take me on. Okay, it's an interesting conversation. An interesting dilemma for the GEA, especially when you break down who made this decision to keep going with this agreement. It's complicated for them to get out of, but they're not looking at trying to get out of it either. They're just simply saying we can't. Interesting as always. Thanks, Brendan.
That's good.
Bye-bye. Now, the entertainment keeps coming weekend after weekend here in our beautiful region, and the 11th annual Letterkenny Busking Festival competition is set to return. Since the beginning in 2015, the festival has attracted buskers and performers from various genres, creating an incredible entertainment and atmosphere for all to enjoy. We have Jimmy Stafford, member of Letterkenny Chamber, with us, and we also have Johnny Coonan, He's an Irish tribute artist known for celebrating the musical legacy of the late Irish singer-songwriter Christy Hennessy. What a voice he had. What a voice you have, Johnny. He's an amazing singer, or was an amazing singer.
Absolutely, yeah. He was complete genius in my book, an inspiration to all musicians, and put a lot of other people on the map with his talent and his lyrics. And he would have put Chrissy Moore up there and many more, Francis Black, Mary Black, give them songs which they took.
Mm. And what's interesting about him is, while there's a general appreciation of him throughout society, it's those particularly in the music industry with the intimate knowledge of his influence that hold him in the highest regard.
Yes, absolutely. Just his personality alone, you know, he was such a lovely man, I believe. Never got to meet him, but I look at some research on him and I would have loved to have met him, but I was very, very fortunate to be invited down to play at his 80th birthday, which would have been his 80th birthday party down in his hometown in Tralee. A guy called Mark Lean got in touch with me and asked me to come down, and I was welcomed there with such great passion, and the night was just amazing.
Right, we have the Busking Festival is fantastic, isn't it? Because effectively we have, you know, people with proven talent like Johnny sharing a stage effectively with newer artists, other established artists, and the Busking Festival. Busking still retains a very important part of the Irish music industry.
Yeah, I think it's grown, Greg. You know, I mean, we have record entries tomorrow. We have 39 entries so far, which is record. Now, we're going to struggle to fit, but we will get them all in. And if 30 turn up, which we'd expect at least, it's great. But, you know, when I look back tomorrow, when you're between 1:30 and 3, what you'll see on the main street in Letterkenny is an eclectic mix of musicians, singers, solo artists, groups, trad groups, marching band, etc. So it's going to be great. And, you know, what I loved about it over the 11 years that I've been involved, Greg, is you go down and you see a 10-year-old with their mammy and they're playing the little fiddle that they've been learning for the last 2 years, or somebody on who's learned the bagpipes, or a singer who's gone out there. And you and I and Paul had a discussion on Monday about our local hero competition. There's so many people out there who have a hidden talent who are sitting at home and saying, would I be able to do that? And this is, busking is an encouragement to come out. And myself and Johnny were talking about it in the green room earlier on before we came on, that, you know, it's like you can go out there and it gives you a great confidence that you can sing in front of nobody, or 10 people,
well,
or 100
and
people.
Also, too, you know, we've got Lewis Capaldi, Ed Sheeran, Ali Sherlock, whose star is continuing to grow.
Amble. Amble started. Yeah, that's exactly how they started. Busking.
Listen, we'll talk more about it. Johnny, you said you're coming out the other side of a little bit of a throat infection or something along those lines, but we're going to put it to the test now, aren't we? So we're going to get two. We might get one off you first and then chat a bit more. What are you going to sing for us first?
Yeah, well, Jimmy was saying to me there, maybe we should do the Christy Hennessy one, Roll Back the Clouds. It's also, I call it the star, but this is the song that got me to Kerry, actually, would you believe? And we'll give it a shot.
I'm
and hopefully... Hopefully,
and if you're listening, close your eyes and just visualise Christy Hennessy singing this, Greg.
I've been sitting here so long for you to hear my songs, but all you want to know, have I been on the radio? Oh, and who's the biggest star I've seen? What is my favourite scene? And if I get the job, would I sing on Mars? Oh, yes, sir, I would sing on Mars. I'd play upon a star and sing songs of the sun. And when my job was done, oh, I would say I love you so, I'd like to play one more, just for all young lovers, for the road. Ah, tell me, sir, yeah, just how far
too cold to be a star. Now I have known my highs and lows. I've worked in every show and played in every town. Oh, and brought some houses down. Yet the critics never notice me. I'm not a star, you see. But yet I give my heart to every part. Oh, tell me, sir, yeah, just how far I would need to go to be a star. I would stand for hours and hours. I'd wade through sun showers. Ah, with my dancing shoes and my dreams on views. Oh, I'd walk upon an empty stage with one light in my face to be told, don't phone us, but we'll phone you. Oh, yes, sir, I would sing on Mars. Oh, my dream scene to be a star. Now every day the same old scene, the same old happenings. 100 miles of shows, but yet no place to go. Oh, but when your luck is all run out and your axe to take a bow, and you've just stolen the show, now you're on your own. Oh, tell me, sir, yeah, just how far I would need to go to be a star. Me a star. I am a star.
Wow, John, that's amazing. It really is.
Thank you very much.
Blooming talented. What a song too. You know,
absolutely,
really, really
it's
well,
absolutely great, yeah.
Really well written, and the change in emphasis, and it's all just absolutely fantastic. Yeah. So, give us 2 minutes now of how people interact. I presume you're almost oversubscribed in terms of performers, right?
Yeah.
So it's a case of getting out there and supporting them, isn't it?
Yeah, Greg. So in simple terms, they'll arrive at 1 o'clock tomorrow. We'll put them on their pitches and then people can come around and they're performing for an hour and a half. There's three judges, Paul McDevitt, or yours truly, Trudy Nigonel, and Martin Orr. Plus we have two secret judges as well. For an hour and a half, they busk, and at 3:30 at the back of Black of Blake's, we have the prize given. So we ask people just maybe stand at every busker for a few minutes and listen to them. As well as that, if you have a 50 cent or 20 cent, throw it in their guitar case or whatever and just come out and enjoy it. It's a great atmosphere tomorrow. They're coming from all over the county, all over the northwest, which is a lovely thing as well. And, you know, there's a great atmosphere around tomorrow because you'll be 40 tomorrow night and we've the Indian Festival. So it's lovely to see the county northwest embracing.
And the
all
one
this
thing, mostly dry with sunny spells.
Yeah, that's
so
the key thing.
Isn't that the key thing?
This is a man who's busked for years and years in the tubes in London, and you know all about busking, Johnny.
Will you, Johnny, listen, we could chat.
I know.
But we could also listen.
Yeah.
Is there any chance you could play us out?
I can indeed.
Right, before you do, folks, thank you so much for listening to the programme all week and today. We're going to be back with you Monday morning at 9 o'clock. Have a fantastic weekend, whatever you're doing, and please be mindful and safe out there. But to wrap it up today, Johnny, what are you going to sing for us? Johnny Coonan, who's unbelievable. Go ahead.
I would like to take this opportunity and to thank you for having me here this morning and supporting the Busking Festival. And as Jimmy pointed out, there's plenty of music around the town this weekend, which is great for the buskers because there'll be lots of other people, more extra people about, I hope. And the weather is very important. But just to the buskers out tomorrow, enjoy it. It's a very cool thing to do and it encourages other young and up-and-coming musicians to do the same. And just instruments in the house is very important in my book. And I'll play a song. I'm going to mention one name here if I can. This song I'm going to dedicate it to a very fine artist that we just lost a few weeks ago, Glenn Hansard, which was a very fine musician and songwriter, and who also busked in his life in early stages, as we know, on Grafton Street. So I was just going to sing this song to dedicate to Glenn. It's called The First Leaves of Autumn. As the daylight turned to starlight, the seasons turned to change. I get the same old answer, but the question still remains. We shared a brief but magic song by the first leaves of autumn. You were gone, and not until the rain had touched my face, and not until the first leaves fell from space, and not until that moment did I see. I never realized what you meant to me. I never realized what you meant to me. From the days you filled with sunlight, to the laughter in your eyes, and the making and the breaking of the day you said goodbye. We shared a brief but magic song by the first leaves of autumn. You were gone, not until the heart's defense is down, and not until some come all of you come around, and not until that moment did I see. I never realized what you meant to me. I never realized what you meant to me. As the daylight turned to starlight and the seasons turned to change, get the same old answer, but the question still remains. We shared a brief but magic song by the first leaves of autumn. You were gone, and not until